Let's get started. Sorry about that brief delay. What am I looking for? Okay, so it seems like you did a little bit of organization here.
Mm-hmm, just a little. I separated the traces for the earlier single-user ones into miss rate and derivatives for each one separately, so that way maybe it's a little bit easier to compare the stuff within itself.
Yeah. And what is your high-level summary of what you found with the new traces, the Cambridge traces?
There's a possibility that my cache size is too small. I'll have to double check by, maybe we can check out the working set size from the Cambridge trace, especially the ones where we do find problematic. Let's see, try proj for project, I assume. Yeah, you can see right there in the second one, in the third one, and the fourth one, just some possibly problematic readings.
Yeah, this is actually nice because what is this? Oh, the derivatives.
Oh, yeah. So I put them together.
Yeah, these are all pretty high miss rate.
Oh.
And this is zero. This is like a 20% miss rate. Pretty stable. Okay. And this is multi-day? Is this multi-day or just a single day? You know?
For the most part, I recall that these are supposed to be taken over a week, but they didn't seem to separate days, so I don't know if these are individual computers.
Oh, these are all... Oh, no.
And they're organized by lake of volume, and you, they have a timestamp too.
Yeah. So what are they, like disks, or...?
Those are logical volumes.
Logical volumes, you can think of it as disks at some level. Each logical volume has a file system in it. And what is the about the rest? Some of these are small. So what's the difference between here and here? Oh, these are two different traces.
Mm-hmm. Currently, I only have one size and one granularity for the traditional, the average LRU that we have.
Okay. I mean, these traces don't look any
different
than the ones that we already have, right? Except maybe the volume of the data that
take
longer to process.
When I g-unzipped all the files, one of them, just one trace, was like 8.1 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was. Some other ones were also very large. My nukeplot would run out of memory and try and plot some, so I had to, since they're 4,000 granularity, I just wrote a quick program to pretty much get rid of the in-betweens, since we're probably not going to see the levels with them being so big. So it just skips every 4,000 or so in order to get less plot points, because that seems to be what was taking up the memory in the plot.
Okay.
So
you're preserving only one out of every 4,000.
Yeah, because that's the only part where it's really going to change.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also of note, with the earlier single-user traces, I implemented the turning on and off the LRU.
Oh, you did?
So I turned off the...
Can you close that door, please?
Yeah.
Thanks.
The replacement algorithm when it was below the threshold of when the miss rate was the average miss rate over the granularity was below miss rate of 20%, just as a starting value that's a decent size, and maybe we can see some of the results. So I didn't know if you wanted to check that out at all.
Sure, I think we can look at it.
But yeah, I just want to mention.
Yeah, yeah. But none of these traces are, I mean, they're not any significantly different than... We can go through each of these traces, but I don't know if you had a chance to... I think we already looked at this.
So looking at large, if I go back, I probably would increase the width of these.
That one's looking good.
Huh? Well, how much time is each one goes over?
You said 1 week, right? All of these are 1 week traces?
Yeah, but I meant number of axes. Because I think that one might be one of the large ones.
Which one is the one? Is that the user?
User trace.
User.
Because, I mean, you can see the pure red on some of those as it goes up and down in roughly the same areas.
The user is the home directory, right? Is that the second one, the logical?
I'm sorry, Leo, what was your question?
Which trace is that one?
It was user
USR, user.
Right, but there are three files inside the...
Yeah, user underscore one.
Okay. User one. This one is user one.
So it has 45 million traces.
Yeah. Axes, and the next one has 200 million axes, user two. But it has a lot less... locality at this granularity. These are all 4 gigabyte, right?
Yeah, these are all 4 gigabytes, so it's 4,000 granularity.
Yeah, and we don't have the working set size information or how much data was accessed for the...
No, I can always just overkill it, see how it go, but...
No, I can give you that data. I didn't upload it, but I can give you that data.
Yeah, so let's have all of that data organized so that we can look at it when we meet. So that we don't have to look for the data later. Where is the other thing that you were talking about?
Oh, right there. Just pick any, the Casa, Icky, Mad Max, Top Gun, Online, whichever one you feel like.
And these are the where you shut off LRU for below 20% miss rate?
Yeah, I decided to do it with the concatenated one again. Mm-hmm. So that way it was a more... it was a proper comparison. Mm-hmm. You might want something that has a little bit more accesses and stuff.
I picked the one.
Yeah.
Icky.
Because the warm-up periods for starting each new day might hide some of the stuff.
Do you have any summary stats, for instance, average miss rate or total number of misses?
I can get that information for you.
Yeah, because it's hard to... For instance, here, I'm not sure which one is better, unless we have a single number comparison, or a few numbers.
So the type of statistics you'd like would be the total number of misses.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like the misses are a little bit higher with the 20% thresholding.
Yeah, I don't really see any spots where it's lower. Then again, it's hard to tell just your eye.
The other, so you can work with now with different thresholds, right?
Yeah, it's a variable.
And I think we should look at the total number of misses as well. That's important.
Cool.
And this remind me, how are we dealing with rights? Or rights and reads are not distinguished from each other, correct?
They do have information about reads and rights.
I know, but in his simulator.
No, it doesn't treat them any different. I have the capacity to, if I need to. Right now, they're the same.
I remember we had a lengthy discussion about that. And we ultimately concluded that treating them the same is okay. Okay. What are we expecting? So, I mean, with this new algorithm, this new algorithm is not the algorithm that I have in mind. For instance, this algorithm is a more it's a more clear algorithm than the one I have in mind, because it just and how do you know if the miss rate? How do you compute the miss rate again?
We still use granularity for calculating the miss rate.
So you take the last 4,000 axes,
yeah,
and calculate how many misses you had in those 4,000 axes, and that contributes to the miss rate.
That's correct.
So that's one knob, that 4,000.
Yeah.
The other knob is the threshold itself.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sort, these sorts of algorithms where you're using thresholding, typically they have two thresholds, right? An upper threshold and a lower threshold. And the reason it's done that way is so that you don't have ping-ponging effects, where you're switching it on, because the miss rate is always close to that boundary somehow, right? So if you have two thresholds, on the other hand, you turn off the algorithm when you go below the lower threshold, but then when you're between these two thresholds, you don't make any changes to the algorithm. And when it goes above the higher threshold, then you turn it on again.
Okay.
Right. So that's another way to add stability to the system.
Okay. So I could add another variable that's like a margin of error or something like that.
Right. Like, so yeah, you just have two thresholds, right? And every time the system is between these two thresholds, you don't make any changes. But as soon as there is a threshold breach, then you decide what to do. If it falls below the lower, you turn off the algorithm. Goes above the higher, you turn on the algorithm. So that's another. This is just for you to keep in mind. I don't think we should explore it at this point.
Okay.
But one thing which you could do, for instance, is you can have some summary statistics to say how many times did you turn on and off the algorithm. So if that's happening too frequently, then you might need this band to add some stability.
Okay.
So let's get that number first. And the other, it's also very, this window of miss rate calculation.
Oh, to vary the granularity?
Yeah.
Or should I use a separate number for that?
Hmm?
Should I use a separate number for the thresholding miss rate approximation?
No, I'm talking about the window over which you calculate the miss rate. Right, that's 4,000 axes.
Yeah, so I'm talking about the granularity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's distinct from the threshold. The threshold is a percentage, just how much miss rate you turn on the algorithm versus off, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this is the window over which you calculate the miss rate.
Yeah.
And these are, I think of these two as two independent things, like the threshold versus window size. I think they are very, they should be independent. So the other knob, which is the window, I think we should vary that as well. So go lower as well as go higher and see what happens. So if you're at 4,000 for all of these, go down to 2,000 and 1,000 as well as go up to 8,000. So you have four different values. And also think about what other summary statistics we can generate besides the number of times you turn it on and off, the total number of misses, maybe average duration or average number of accesses for which the algorithm is turned off.
The number of evictions is also important.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about number of evictions statistic.
Yeah. So you could make your simulator more and more informative.
Mm-hmm.
And we can use all that information here and start plotting some of those things. As for instance, one of the things we could plot is, as you change this granularity or the window size, how does your miss rate change? Your total number, because just a single number, now you can have a line plot there. And so instead of doing the timeline, we have a summary information. And then we can create a plot varying all of these different parameters. And vary also the threshold.
Yeah. I was just doing 20% just as a relative starting point.
Yeah, if you want to make this intelligent, I would think about, well, how should this threshold be set up, right?
Yeah.
In an intelligent manner. Is this threshold even static at any level, or is it changing dynamically? Right, that's the other question. Does it make sense to think of a threshold that changes all the time? On every axis, it changes.
I have a question. Your algorithm, when you said the threshold is 20%, so do you refer 20% of the stable or just below 20% of the miss rate?
When the miss rate is calculated over the granularity to be less than 20%, it just doesn't go through process of replacing the pages.
Okay. Because maybe we should think it should be a lesser threshold, maybe 5% up and down of the current stable miss rate, if that's possible. I don't know if that's too complicated, but for example, you can have a stable miss rate that's over 20% but still stable. So when we refer as a phase change, as a peak on the number of misses, is that your stable miss rate is increasing over a certain percentage, but it may be stable over 20%, for example. So maybe we can figure out a way to determine when is it stable and then say, well, if it increases over this miss rate, then...
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, one thing is that even if you pick a threshold that is... I mean, for instance, your threshold could be zero. If the threshold is zero, which means the replacement algorithm is always on, right? Threshold is 100 means replacement algorithm is always off.
No, I understand.
Correct?
Yeah.
And so anything in between, the replacement algorithm is going to be on sometime and off at other times. it's also possible that even if your threshold is, let's say, 20%, it's always on because this thing has very high miss rate for the given cache size. Right? I think, Ricardo, the point you're trying to make is that if we look at some stable properties of the miss rate, say, over the last 1,000 windows, what was my miss rate? Is there a lot of variation there? And if there is not a lot of variation, then that means there is a stable misbehavior. And if there is stable misbehavior, well, ideally this should not be for 100%. 100% gets excluded, right? Because you can't go beyond 100%. So, but if you have let's say a stable miss rate at 30%, and your threshold is at 20%. There is perhaps some motivation to turn off replacement even though your threshold is lower than the current miss rate.
Yes.
Because the miss rate is stable. Correct? Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
Yes.
And the reason there is some motivation is because you have a large working set and you're missing 30% of that working set and you're just churning, right? So it's better if you don't replace. I think that's an interesting dynamic algorithm where your threshold is changing dynamically. Certainly worth exploring. Something for you to think about more. Right. There's another thing here, which is, let's say you use the 20% threshold and you get a certain total number of misses. If you make that threshold 40% and you get the same total number of misses, then 40% is actually good. And that's the other thing we have to think about. So, if you have those summary statistics, on the x-axis you can vary the threshold, and on the y-axis you can plot total miss rate. And do you see any leveling off at any point? And so you can look at those kinds of interesting properties. Okay, so this is the next thing that the summary stats are the next thing that you can start looking at. And you might have to further organize that main page because now you have lots and lots of stuff in there.
Yeah, I guess.
So create another level, put all of this stuff in a different page, and then you can start organizing that other page a little better.
Yeah, I guess so. I can do that.
How about you guys? Have you guys been able to come up with something yet?
Okay, so I tried to do the animation
we
talked about, but I have some trouble with the data. Like, I'm generating too much data, and I'm running out of resources. So I need to figure out a way to optimize this.
By the way, there are a few machines in the department that have lots of memory. That have... I'm trying to recollect the names of those machines, but anyone can log into those machines. I think some of those machines have 128 gigabytes of memory, DRAM.
Yeah.
And then you can do much easier analysis when you have large amounts of data.
Yeah, because the problem that I had so far is I tried to do this analysis with the FIU traces. And I leave like plenty of space, like 200 gigabytes of disk available for the results to be stored. And then I wanted to make the plots. But I left it running because it was taking a long time. It was a lot of memory. And
Do you see like the application or whatever your analysis making any progress, or is just stuff swapping?
It's swapping a lot, and then at some point I did some modifications, so it reduced the amount of memory. But it's since for every miss we're printing every logical base address and the distance, it's running out of disks of storage space. So Leo suggested that I store the data in binary and reduce that size. But I still think it's a lot. Like if I reduce it by 5 times, I still think it's generating a lot. But I could try to do that and then see what further.
The reason you're generating all this data is for you to create the animation later.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can create the animation as you generate the data and discard the data afterwards.
Yeah, maybe that's a possibility. I mean, I could generate the plots and just discard the data. I don't know if that's gonna occupy less storage than is it possible? Is the graphic gonna occupy less? Well, yeah, it could. Well, I can generate the graphs right away and just don't save the data at all, and then generate the animation with the
graph. So you're generating one graph for every axis?
For every miss.
For every miss.
Because for every miss, we need, what we talked about last
mm-hmm.
session is that for every miss, we need to calculate the distance of the axis of each logical base address that the traces is.
You mean stack distance?
Yeah. So, what I remember that we wanted to do is,
yeah,
I'm gonna have this. So we have all the LBAs, and we have this dotted line here, and this is distance.
Yeah.
And this is the number, and the distance is represented by the number of accesses before accessing that logical base address. And then this is the size of the cache, which will represent an array of this number, right? And what I was trying to do is make a difference between the points that are outside the cache and inside the cache at that point. So maybe put it in different colors and see if the points that are in the cache are near this line.
These are the items that are being replaced. Correct?
Yeah.
These are being replaced.
Well.
So if they are being replaced, they are in the cache.
Well, this is the net assets of everyone, and there's only one element that's being replaced at that moment, right?
Yeah.
So these elements that are still in the cache, but the for example, the blue ones are still in the cache. So let's say that we have some blue ones here too. Some points here. So let's say...
What is the... what are the blue ones and green ones?
Okay, so let's say that we have two set of points. Blue ones and green ones. So
okay.
The blue ones will be inside the cache at this point in time. And
okay.
In this axis, when we generated this graph, all these logical base addresses...
Block addresses.
All these block addresses are inside the cache.
Mm-hmm.
Are stored inside the cache. And all the green ones are not
mm-hmm.
currently right now. So we say that the distance or the number of accesses before accessing these logical base addresses are represented by these points. And this is the size of the cache.
Well, okay. So why do I have green points that are... lesser than have a lower stack distance and they are not in the cache?
Yes, the distance the distance for them to be reused after this many accesses, that point is going to be reused.
I see. This future.
Yeah, there's a future access to that point. So, what I thought it was going to be helpful is finding
what is being animated then.
The movement of this point. Mm-hmm.
The movement of the points.
Every graph, you can think of every graph of that as a frame in the movie.
Okay. And let's say this is one frame. What is in the next?
potentially in the next round?
Well, let's say that the Nets frame, the Nets access in the is also a mess.
Okay.
So we have the same graph, exactly the same graph,
yeah.
But all of these elements will be reduced by one, and the element that is being replaced is going to be zero. So instead of this being 100, for example, the largest is 100 in this frame. In the next frame, the largest is going to be 99. And then the element that is being accessed right now is going to be zero because it's been accessed at this point. There's one that's going to be one. Maybe it's not in the cache because it's a mess. So that's what I wanted to analyze is searching for stages in time in the frame where you have a lot of points that are near this line of the size of the cache. So you say, well, we have all these accesses, and from all these accesses, that's going to be the size of the cache. We have
they're not accessing. They were accessed in the past, right?
No, we're looking at the future right now.
I know, but these points were at least accessed once in the past.
Not necessarily.
Otherwise, they won't show up on this.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Because we... Well,
so you have all the LBAs then?
Yeah, well...
You have
yeah.
one point for every LBA?
Yes. Unless it's not going to be... The only reason why I wouldn't have a point for all the LBAs is that LBA is not going to be accessed at all ever again
in the trace
from this point forward, because I look forward until I get all the points.
Mm-hmm.
I either get all the points and I say, well, I'll visit all the LBA, so we don't need to look forward in the future, or we look at all the trace and we say, well, this is all the
this plot. Does it tell me which the stack distance for the point which got replaced?
The stack distance for the point which got replaced is going to be zero.
No, that was the point that was brought in, but there was an eviction. The one that was thrown out.
Oh yeah. That it will tell you the.
Where is it?
I could represent it with another. I could get that data. I don't have it. But I could get the point that was evicted as another color, maybe, and just give it another value. And
this is different than what we talked about last time, by the way. This what you came up with is different. It may be equivalent. I don't see, because it, at least for now, it doesn't show me what got thrown out. The main reason for motivating this algorithm to turn it off is so that evictions don't happen. So we do care about items that are being evicted, probably more than the items that are being brought in. So recall that the plot that I had was very different than the one that you drew here. And I just want to see if this plot addresses that in any way. Right? So here you have distance. And here you have VLBA. It's the same thing. What I was interested in was the item that is being replaced.
Just that.
Let's focus on the item that is being replaced and see its future stack distance. Over time, in my movie, there's only one point per frame.
Okay.
And that tells me one point per miss.
Okay.
That tells me where is the item that was just replaced going to be accessed in the future.
Okay. No, I'm totally misunderstood. I thought it was for every LBA.
No, this may be fine too. I'm glad you're doing this independently.
Okay,
but let me tell you what I had in mind. And maybe some combination of this is the right thing to do. So what I was thinking about, if we have, let's say, a lot of replacements that are happening over here, right? These are all being evicted. It's good.
But if below the line, then it's bad because you're going to use them again soon. You're evicting them. But then it doesn't necessarily have to be below the line for it to be bad. If you have a lot of points, the reason is that if we have a lot of points that are really near this line.
What is this line representing?
The size of the cache. It's the same as this line. But this one.
Actually, you know what? Now that I think about this, this should probably be a combination of this and this. So every frame will have, in this new version, every frame has 2 points. 1 point for the LBA that was evicted, another point for the LBA that was brought in.
Okay.
And you're looking at future access distance for both of them.
Yeah, for just that.
For both of them.
Okay.
Just the one that got replaced as well as the one that got brought in.
Okay.
Okay. So, if I have frames where the one that got replaced is blue and the one that got brought in is green, if this is happening all the time, then I'm doing unnecessary evictions. Right? But if I have frames where my blue is here and my green is here, that was actually a good thing. But I could also have blue here and green here. That's pretty bad. But I don't know how this can be an easy animation because it's probably going to fly too fast. So something like this, in combination with something like this, that gives me a visual idea of this phenomenon, I think would be good. But what I'm telling you here, which is two points per frame, is going to be useless because that movie is going to go so fast that you cannot make out anything.
And I wrote a script that does exactly that. It collects that data specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So over the weekend, I was doing some work.
Mm.
And I wrote the function that ranks the distance and generates exactly that data.
Mm.
I don't have that plot. I have some other plots that are not very good, but I can show you what I have so far.
Mm-hmm.
Here. So let me show you. I keep coming around here. So this is the function that does the ranking. So of two.
And this is the future distance, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So the ranking is simply, basically, this list represents a sequence of requests,
mm.
starting with the current request. So
mm.
just looking for the current point onto the future, and then you compute the distance by simply walking that list and see where you find. X and Y are the ones that are being accessed and the one being evicted.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically the script. So I create a cache. By the way, I wrote Angular U cache. I like the Angular U cache for Python because when I see the code every time the road, it makes me cry.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult to read. And basically, I collect that information. So here I have the accesses ranked and the ones being evicted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the distance from the current point. And then I plotted both. And the idea was that every time that the distance of the one being accessed,
mm.
meaning the one that is put into the class, is lower
mm.
than the one being evicted, then this makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And every time that it's not...
Well, not necessarily. It doesn't... Even if both are outside the cache size, then even if the one that you're bringing in has a lower distance... It doesn't help because it's going to be thrown out before it's accessed again.
Right. Okay.
But at least it's not terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
So I plot this graph, which doesn't tell me anything they use.
So what is that plotting?
It's plotting basically the distance of both the one being axis and the one being a victim. So the idea was that if the blue line is higher than the green one, then the distance of the one being axis is longer.
Mm-hmm.
But this is very difficult to interpret. So what I did
Why is it going down? Because you're populating the cache, I guess.
Right. And of course, this changes substantially based on the size of the cache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's okay.
Oh, no. That would be independent of the size of the cache. This plot will be independent of the size of the cache. Because here you're only...
The amount of data that you generate is lesser, bigger, so the cache is bigger, so you have less evictions.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
So here's the same plot, but as a difference of the two. So I basically subtracted the difference of the one being axis and the one being a victim.
Mm.
And of course, you sometimes get some positive numbers and negative numbers. The data that is missing here is because sometimes the distance, when it's no longer in the future, the distance is infinite. And then this thing, the infinite data doesn't plot it. It's just the one like this. So you have some positive and negative numbers.
Most of it is infinite.
Most of it is infinite, yeah. For this trace.
Uh-huh.
And then you say, well, this is difficult to read too, so I did a histogram of the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that it's entering a negative value.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what I think this means is that the difference between the one being axis and the one being evicted is a negative value, meaning that the distance of one being evicted is higher. And it's center here.
That's a good thing.
Right.
Except that this is only for the initialization phase, I think. Your cache is still getting warmed up.
No, this is for the Cambridge traces. So it's the whole week.
It's the whole week, but the distances are monotonically going down. At least in the first plot you showed.
Right. This axis means this is the index of the axis.
That's just few axes, 25,000.
Right, because you only plot the ones that I think for this case I use a cache of 64 megabytes.
Uh-huh.
So that was very big, about 70% of the first 70% of the axes were put in the cache.
Yeah.
So I started generating evictions after being walked about 70% of the axes. So I guess we need to use a smaller cache for that one in particular. The problem with this is that this ranking this ranking function is correct, but every time I'm walking the entire thing and it's very expensive, it's n squared. And the time is mostly spent on calculating the ranks. So what I'm trying to do right now is the same data indexed differently so that I reduce the lookups instead of being n to be for maybe use some hash tables.
Hash table is the right thing here.
To reduce this substantially. So this is the same idea, but I was thinking about it instead of collecting all the data, just the one being evicted and the one that is being accessed is all you need. And the cache, this little cache that I wrote, has all the information, the amount of evictions and misses and all that.
And you're simulating true LRU?
This implementation of LRU is from Python 3.3. They use a different, so I wrote the code and make it smaller, remove some stuff that I don't need it, and that's what I'm using. So, yeah, it's LRU. It has a hash table and link list.
Okay. I unfortunately had to get ready for class, but this is good. I think, Ricardo, what you're doing over there is also good. I don't know what the points around the lines mean for you. I don't quite get that. But now that you understand this a little better, maybe you can think about how to merge what you are doing with that.
Yeah, no, it's easy to get the information because the LRU cache that I'm using is also some implementation that they did for 2.7 Python. And I can this.
I think plotting all the LBAs may not be necessary.
Okay.
That's probably what is generating a lot of points for you.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, if I only need two points.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want you to give up on what you're doing immediately. But think about it and see the ideas here that I was talking about, whether, you know, how they apply to what you were doing earlier. And then decide which way you want to go.
This
the animation.
This is the format of the data that I generate. So every line has an index of the axis. This is axis 11. This is for a very small data test. And these are the rank of the one being accessed, the rank of the one being evicted. You see that it was never used again. And this is the offset of the one being accessed and the offset of the one being evicted. And you have that for every time that you have an eviction. I think with this we can generate the plot that we want.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And this is for the entire tricks.
Yes, it's just that it takes too long.
It takes a long time.
Right. So I
so you gotta use a hash table.
Yes, I have to change the implementation.
Yeah.
The way I'm indexing the data.
By any chance do you have any more time today?
Yeah, let me see. Maybe in the afternoon. Are we meeting with the Fusion people? We don't have to, right? We should
talk about what?
I don't know, so we should cancel it because it's on my calendar.
Yeah, what's your cancel?
Yeah. Just send out an email to them.
Okay.
Ask them if they want to meet and suggest not meeting.
So because
instead
I,
of canceling it.
I have an idea how we may plot this that in a way that it could be interesting. For us to work.
Let's talk at 3:30. 3:30? Does that work for you?
Yeah. I think we got out of class. Yeah, we got out of class.
So let's talk at 3:30. Why don't you let's all of us meet.
Okay.
I don't know if, Steve, you don't have to. I'll meet with these two guys.
No problem.
Okay. Thank you.
So...